Good morning. It is Saturday, March 9th, 2024, and this is Charlottesville Community Engagement. I'm Sean Tubbs, a local journalist who writes about infrastructure, budgets, and all sorts of decisions about what gets built. What you're going to hear is a digest of stories that have been used this week in the podcast version of a newsletter I send out, with much of the sound coming from local government meetings. The idea is to capture this moment in our community's history in as much detail as possible. On today's program, the University of Virginia surpasses its $5 billion fundraising campaign and gets two major donations from the Harrison Foundation. An update on UVA's efforts to build between 1,000 and 1,500 affordable housing units across the community. The Buildings and Grounds Committee of the UVA Board of Visitors takes action on several items, including approving the location for a new parking garage to serve North Grounds. Charlottesville City Manager Sam Sanders recommends a fiscal year 2025 budget based on raising the real property tax rate, the meals tax rate, and the lodging tax rate to cover the cost of paying unionized and non-unionized city employees more money and benefits. Three new members have been appointed to the city's Housing Advisory Committee, and Charlottesville City Council reallocates $215,000 in federal funds that will enable the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank to offer more produce. In today's first public service announcement, the Eastern Mennonite University Chamber Singers will present a concert, A Chorus of Peace, Songs of Lament and Hope, on Saturday, March 9th at 7 p.m. at the Charlottesville Mennonite Church. The program explores the range of emotions surrounding the desire for peace. Free of charge, with donations accepted toward touring expenses. For more information, send an email to cvillemeno@gmail.com or go online to emu.edu/music/chamber-singers. The University of Virginia is governed by a 17-member Board of Visitors, who have four regular meetings a year. The last one was held at the beginning of the month. The Advancement Committee learned on February 29th that a major fundraising milestone had been met since their last meeting in December. Mark Llewellyn is the Vice President of Advancement at the University of Virginia.
We're humbled to say that the last time we were together, we were about $35 million away from hitting the $5 billion goal for the campaign, and thankfully, due to so many, that happened before the end of the year.
The campaign is called Honor the Future, and there is still about a year and a half left until it ends.
It's been really heartwarming and humbling to see that things didn't stop once we hit five. And so not only did we hit five, but as of yesterday, we crossed $5.1 billion. In total commitments for the campaign.
Llewellyn said since the beginning of the fiscal year, UVA has raised over $450 million, up 23% from the year before. Part of that is that the number of large contributions has increased.
We're now, I think, at about 73 gifts of $1 million or more since July 1, and that's up 40% year over year.
Peter Grant is the chair of the Honor the Future campaign, and he said over 200,000 people have contributed to the effort. He also told the Advancement Committee that at least some alumni have paused donation due to disagreements of political conversations that have happened at UVA in a time of polarization.
On the other hand, I think we've retained the support of a great many more people who believe that this university can stand as a leader or the ideal for, you know, a marketplace of ideas, freedom of expression, open discourse, and many of them ask in the conversation we have, if that can't happen at the University of Virginia, where can it happen?
Grant also took the opportunity to point out major contributions that have resulted in new buildings and infrastructure, such as the School of Data Science, a new performing arts center, and the Karsh Institute for Democracy.
All three of which will be anchor tenants in the Emmett Ivy Corridor, which is yet another symbol and signal of the growth and where we're headed.
Grant said these new buildings and others, such as the Future Institute of Biotechnology at Fontaine Research Park, demonstrate to alumni the importance of their donations. At the end of the Advancement Committee's meeting, President Jim Ryan had an announcement of two large donations.
A new $25 million gift from the Harrison Foundation will name the Harrison Family Olympic Sports Center. And a $30 million gift from the Harrison Foundation and the Mary Anderson Harrison Foundation will create the Harrison Family Research Center, a new translational research center in Alzheimer's and neurodegenerative diseases in the Manning Institute of Biotechnology.
Ground was broken for the Biotechnology Institute in December. The University of Virginia's Great and Good strategic plan helped guide the public institution to cross that $5 billion fundraising campaign. One item in the plan called for the creation of a Good Neighbor program. The Finance Committee of the UVA Board of Supervisors got an update on March 1st. This particular story is in the March 6th edition of Seaville Weekly. Pace Lochte is the Assistant Vice President for Economic Development.
Affordable housing is one of the six issues that was identified by the community as being important to work on with UVA, and as I understand it, affordable housing was the very top critical issue.
UVA has identified three locations for where between 1,000 and 1,500 new units would be built on land the school or its foundation owns. The Piedmont Housing Alliance has been selected to partner on developing the Piedmont housing site off of Fontaine Avenue, and an out-of-town group called Preservation of Affordable Housing will develop a site at the corner of 10th and Wortland in Charlottesville.
It's a smaller site, about 2 acres, but a very strategic site. It really is on the border of Town Gown. It's across the street from the UVA Medical Center.
The third site is at the North Fork Discovery Park, recently rezoned by the Albemarle Board of Supervisors for residential use. A partner for that site has not yet been identified. Timelines for each project depend on financing and the time it will take to get building permits.
So our best guess, based on our partners, is early 2026 for moving dirt.
As of March 1st, Lochte said negotiations on agreements between UVA and the partners are still underway, and a lot of due diligence and community engagement needs to still occur.
So we're really trying to identify how we can be complementary to the ongoing efforts of many, many in this community who've been doing affordable housing for a long time.
Lochte said financing will likely be dependent on low-income housing tax credits, a mechanism that Piedmont Housing Alliance will rely upon for other affordable projects on the books, such as 501 Cherry, the Park Street Christian Church Apartments, and the redevelopment of the MACA site on Park Street. Those projects will also be fueled by capital improvement program funds from Charlottesville. The 10th and Wortland site will be steps away from West Haven, a Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority site, which council has agreed in principle to put $15 million towards. UVA is not planning to put financial resources into the project. Jim Murray is a member of the UVA Board of Visitors.
University of Virginia is investing no taxpayer dollars, no tuition dollars. We are leasing under a long-term lease at a very low rate, land that we otherwise do not have a use for.
The two sites announced so far will be reserved for households who make less than 80% of the area median income, which is $123,000 for a family of four. Lochte said that could mean that nurses at UVA could be eligible to live in some of these units. At the end of the lease, the buildings would revert to the University of Virginia's ownership, according to Tim Rose, the chief executive officer of the UVA Foundation.
Understand they'd be highly depreciated buildings, so that'd be for a future board many decades from now to figure out whether you'd want to demolish them, use the land for UVA purposes, or fix them up and rent them at market rates. There's a lot of things you could do. Turn them into dormitories.
But first, they have to be built. There's a lot going on at the University of Virginia, the region's largest and most influential employer and developer. On February 29th, the Buildings and Grounds Committee of the Board of Visitors took action on several projects, including conceptual approval for a North Grounds parking garage. Alice Rocher is the University of Virginia architect.
In 2019, the parking and transportation study projected a near-term parking shortfall, which was deferred due to the pandemic, but is now materializing.
A site has been identified at the northwest corner of Massey Road and Copley Road. and that will require the demolition of 8 buildings in the Copley Apartments Complex, which provide housing for graduate students.
But at the same time, we're continuing to study providing more student housing on grounds.
The committee approved the concept. The garage will support both commuters as well as people attending events at John Paul Jones Arena and other nearby venues. The Buildings and Grounds Committee also approved the schematic design for student housing at Darden after having a preliminary look in December. There will be a total of 218 units and 348 bedrooms built across 2 buildings. The larger structure will be between the parking garage and the Darden campus, and the smaller one will be built to the north of the Abbott Center.
The architects took your comments from the last meeting, studied the existing Darden buildings, and lightened up the details of the facade, adding a lot of focus around the main entry.
The project has a cost estimate of $165 million. The committee also agreed to demolish a pedestrian bridge that crosses Emmett Street from the Curry School of Education. Another bridge is under construction nearby that will land at Newcomb Plaza. Colette Sheehy is UVA's Senior Vice President for Operations and State Government Relations.
It's been there since 1970. And now that we have the new bridge associated with Contemplative Commons, the Walker Bridge, we really don't need this bridge any longer.
The old bridge was built in 1970 and is not compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act. The new one is. Several namings were made as well. The panel formally approved the naming of the Paul and Diane Manning Institute of Biotechnology at the Fontaine Research Park. The McIntyre School of Commerce's expansion will be known as the Ramon W. Breeden Jr. Commerce Grounds, after a man who has recently donated $50 million to UVA. Additionally, a roadway owned by Albemarle County that passes through the southeast corner of the complex will be called Breeden Way. Additionally, the new video scoreboard at Scott Stadium will be named after Breeden, as well as the new athletic grounds where the Football Operations Center and Olympic Sports Center are being built. The Japanese garden at the Darden Arboretum will be named for Charles G. Duffy III. You're listening to Charlottesville Community Engagement, and it's time for another public service announcement. The Shady Grove Coffee House, a folk music concert series in Glen Allen, Virginia, now in its 23rd season, announces its March concert featuring Mustard's Retreat. Saturday, March 9th, doors open at 7:30 p.m. Now, in their 50th year of touring, Mustard's Retreat have traveled more than 1 million miles and performed more than 6,000 shows, from pig roasts and pool parties to Lincoln Center Out of Doors, the Barnes at Wolf Trap, and the Kennedy Center's Millennium Stage. The concert begins at 8 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Community Church in Glen Allen. Tickets are available at shadygrovecoffeehouse.com. Tickets also may be reserved by calling 804-323-4288 or emailing tickets@shadygrovecoffeehouse.com. The Charlottesville City Manager is recommending a 2-cent increase on the property tax rate, as well as increases in both the meals tax and the lodging tax in the recommended fiscal year 2025 budget. Sam Sanders is recommending a budget based on $251,526,900 of revenues. That's a 10.11% increase over the current fiscal year. He said the document is based on Council's adoption of strategic plan goals last September.
It is important for us to never lose sight that as we build a budget and do the work for the city, we're doing it with this in mind. There are $23 million in new revenue for this fiscal year alone. And your top funding priorities are collective bargaining, class and compensation, and investment in schools.
Sanders said he attempted to build a budget without increasing tax rates, but felt he had direction from council to pursue that option. If adopted as is, the meals tax would increase from 6.5% to 7.5%. The lodging tax would increase from 8% to 9%, and the property tax rate would increase from 96 cents per $100 of assessed value to 98 cents per $100 of assessed value.
Raising taxes is never easy and never taken lightly. Because this proposed budget does rely on tax increases, I want to ensure both council and the public at large that I follow through on some of the difficult decisions that I initially provided to you as something that we could do with regard to internal budget planning as a trade-off on some of the increased tax revenues.
Sanders said he made $2.5 million worth of cuts to departments and reduced another $2 million by deferring the hiring of people for some vacant positions. During his presentation, Sanders said the city will be a very different workplace when all six collective bargaining units are in place, and this will be a major change for the fiscal realities of the city. The budget has a 2% salary increase for all employees and a 1% cost of living increase for retirees on city pensions. The recommended budget only recommends funding $7 million of Charlottesville City Schools' $9 million request. However, the capital improvement program includes $30 million for conversion of Walker Upper Elementary School to a pre-K center. Before Sanders presented his budget, the school system presented their funding request to the city. Here is Superintendent Royal Gurley.
Our enrollment is trending upward. We are heading back to pre-pandemic enrollment numbers.
That may not last for long, according to projections from the Weldon Cooper Center for Public Service at the University of Virginia. They are the officially recognized service that does these projections. Data released in mid-January project a total enrollment of 4,209 for the upcoming school year, down slightly from an actual enrollment of 4,220 this year. Weldon Cooper Center projects that declining to 3,754 by 2028, though demographer Hamilton Lombard said that number does not reflect potential changes that may be caused by the new development code. Gurley said the school system will receive around $3 million less from the Commonwealth of Virginia because of lower enrollment numbers during the pandemic. The local composite index is used by the Virginia Department of Education to determine a community's relative worth, and another factor is the recent jump in property values since the pandemic.
According to state guidelines, the higher your LCI, the greater the locality's ability to pay.
As such, the school system is asking council to make up the difference. He also said that the school system used one-time money to pay for a state-mandated 2% salary increase last year and requested the local government cover that expense going forward. The school budget also includes 21.5 new positions, many of which will be presented to students who don't speak English as a first language, as well as anticipated enrollment growth. Again, the Weldon Cooper Center currently projects a decline over the next 5 years. As his presentation neared its conclusion, Gurley summarized the school system's request.
This includes an ask in the increase in city appropriation for the FY25 budget of roughly $9 million.
Another factor in the request are ongoing costs associated with the city's acquisition of Albemarle County's share of the Charlottesville Area Technical Education Center. Another unknown is what additional funding for education might be in the final budget to be approved by the General Assembly. Councilors discussed the possibility of revisiting local formulas that fund public education to provide more funding going forward. Here is City Councilor Brian Pinkston.
We need to be able to go out and tell the rest of the community, okay, the baseline has shifted. Things are different now. That means you're going to have to contribute more, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer. And, you know, that's what we'll have to do.
I'll have more from the budget in future editions of the newsletter and podcast versions of Charlottesville Community Engagement, and perhaps in this radio version on WTJU. The appointed body that has had a major influence on the creation of the new development code has three new members, but still has two vacancies. The Housing Advisory Committee is a 12-person group with slots reserved for specific categories. Pepe Linden and Michael Parisi have both been named as the two at-large members. Lyndon spent 21 years as the executive director of the Virginia Discovery Museum. Parisi is the vice president of the Rose Hill Neighborhood Association. Developer Nicole Scrow has been named to the Housing Advisory Committee in a position reserved for real estate professionals. She joins Planning Commissioner Philip Duranzio and Heather Griffith of Nest Realty in that category. Council also reassigned Dan Rosenzweig of Habitat for Humanity of Greater Charlottesville from the real estate category to the nonprofit representation category, where he joins Sunshine Mathon, the executive director of the Piedmont Housing Alliance, and John Sales, executive director of the Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority. Joy Johnson, a resident of West Haven and an employee of the Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority, is on the Housing Advisory Committee as an affordable housing beneficiary. There are still two vacant positions in this category. Councilor Michael Payne is the City Council's representative. At their last meeting on February 21st, the Housing Advisory Committee discussed the creation of a land bank ordinance. These meetings are held in city space and are not recorded. In other appointments, Al Pola and Cameron McBride have been named to the Police Civilian Oversight Board. The city's website does not list the members of this group. Jeffrey Ayton has been reappointed to the Charlottesville Tree Commission, and three new members have been appointed. They are Eric Bretter, Shanti Levy, Woody Parrish, and Manuel Lerdau. One way to find out what's happening with municipal government in Charlottesville is to review periodic reports from City Manager Sam Sanders. He also provides some comments at each meeting, such as an update last night on a meeting for the study of planning for alternatives to the city's natural gas distribution network.
The decarbonization study work session is scheduled for the 26th. It's a special work session that's been added. The Office of Sustainability, Utilities Department, and the consultant Black & Veatch will all be present to walk Council through an update as to where we are.
The study got underway last year, and Council had a briefing last March. Sanders put the work on hold in January.
Part of what you'll hear in the March session will be an update to some public outreach events that we plan to have so that we can get more feedback and then hopefully be able to bring something forward in the way of recommendations by the late summer.
In April, the city will begin implementing a system similar to Albemarle County's Human Services Alternative Response Team, or HART.
We'll be rolling out a co-responder model where Human Services, Police Department, and Fire Department will be coming together and working on better strategies on how we respond to individuals in crisis.
In the written report, relatively new Deputy City Manager Eden Ratliff introduced himself and pointed to his experience in local government in Pennsylvania, where unions for public workers are more common than in Virginia, where they were only authorized in 2020. In his statement, Ratliff states that collective bargaining is a new concept for Charlottesville and that there are many implications both for the cost of the workforce as well as how to manage it. He has been helping to train city council as the city prepares to move to a unionized workforce in fiscal year 25. So far, fire, police, and transit workers have unionized. According to City Communications Director Afton Schneider, the collective bargaining ordinance approved by council recognizes up to 6 bargaining units, with 3 currently recognized. The remaining slots are for the categories of labor and trades, administrative and technical, and professional workers. Schneider wrote in an email to me that the Teamsters have filed a petition to have the labor and trades bargaining unit recognized. Other items from the written report. On March 18th, Charlottesville will consider funding requests for affordable housing projects. There were 17 applications through the Housing Operations Program's support, HOPS, and 6 received from the Charlottesville Affordable Housing Fund. Also on March 18th, Council will consider a resolution to govern the financing of the second phase of the redevelopment of Friendship Court into Kindlewood. People have begun to move into the 62 units in Phase 1, and there are to be 104 units in Phase 2. The Housing Advisory Committee is working on recommendations for a land bank ordinance, but in the meantime, the city is working on developing procedures to govern land purchases. In the past year, Council has spent $5.9 million to acquire property along the Rivanna River to prevent a development, and another $4 million to purchase property from the Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority. And finally, appeals of property assessments are down sharply over last year, according to the assessor's office. The deadline passed on February 29th, and as of a week before that date, there were only 40 applications. That's compared to 345 in 2023. Charlottesville City Council met on Tuesday this past week instead of Monday, as the city marked Freedom and Liberation Day. On Tuesday, Council approved the reallocation of $215,000 in federal funding to the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank to help the nonprofit purchase a larger refrigerator. Anthony Warren is a grants analyst with Charlottesville's Office of Community Solutions.
The limited capacity that they have for the store often leads them to have to turn away donations of fresh produce.
The organization covers 25 counties and has been busy the past few years with both the pandemic and with rising food costs due to inflation. Michael McKee is the chief executive officer of the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank.
Last year, we distributed about 27 million pounds of food through these community organizations. That's enough for about 23 million meals, and about 30% of that food was fresh produce.
McKee said the need for the organization is growing, as has its need to use more of its resources to acquire food.
In 2019, the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank spent $1.8 million buying food for distribution. Last year, we spent $5.3 million buying food for distribution.
McKee said capital costs, such as a new cold storage unit, take away from the ability to deliver food to households in need. If approved, council would cover the entire cost of the project, which would also include covering the loading dock area. The new infrastructure could also reduce energy costs because the current refrigerator runs almost constantly. Here is Vice Mayor Brian Pinkston.
I'm ecstatic to support this. I think the fact that we're able to help ourselves and also help the network and to support our volunteers, I think it's a great project.
City Councilor Michael Payne referred to the presentation by UVA students earlier in the afternoon on behalf of the Public Housing Association of Residents. They asked for the Community Development Block Grant funds to not be used for physical infrastructure like parks and sidewalks. He said this one makes the cut.
This kind of allocation is exactly the kind of allocations we should be making with CDBG, strategic, high impact, long-term impact, indirectly benefiting working in poor people in our community.
The majority of the money had been programmed for streetscape infrastructure, including over $155,000 from fiscal year 2022 that would have gone to a sidewalk project on Ridge Street. Payne supported the allocation.
It highlights that why we should not invest in capital projects because we can't deliver them on time.
We only have about 30 seconds left in this edition of the WTJU version of Charlottesville Community Engagement. I'm Sean Tubbs. For more on any of these stories, you can visit the Town Crier Productions website at infoseville.com. I'll be back next week with another selection of stories. Thanks for listening.